Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints. You were supposed to hear that in the introduction. Being a holiday, though, those things are easily forgiven. Merry Christmas to everyone, and I hope you had a wonderful day so far with your relatives, with your friends, and maybe we'll play the opening music at the end of the show tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight on this December the 24th. On the West Coast, it still is Christmas Eve, of course, you well know. On the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it is now officially Christmas. And we're going to talk about Christmas, amongst other things. We're going to probably talk a bit on the topic of the assault on Christianity and religion in general. And I'm not necessarily speaking about organized religion. What I'm referring to is our right to worship, our right to know God and to follow God as the supreme law of the land and of the universe. And with that, I would like to bring on tonight's guest. He is a regular now on Evident Footprints. He is a scientist, an environmental scientist. He is also a chemist and an herbologist and a musician. And he is my good friend, Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Don. Thanks for inviting me back on.
My pleasure to have you back on. How is your Christmas so far with the ice storms and the torrential rains and wind and all of that?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what we've been getting. Right now, we're real lucky because it's warmed up. It's unusually mild, not icy conditions anymore. So that's pretty good for a start today.
Well, you're lucky. Let me tell you that.
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
You're lucky. Our streets, our roads, our highways are frozen over like an ice pond, and have been that way for the past few days now. I think we're going on the fourth day. It melts and then it freezes up again, and it becomes actually a bit more dangerous because we had snow before that. That's melting.
Right.
And it was like being in a hurricane today when this front came in.
Yeah, big gusts of wind, a lot of snow, and then freezing rain, and then rain, and it's pretty mild right now around here. It's unusual, but it's been consistent for the last three, four winters so far, where December we've had some unusually mild weather, right into January.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say we have mild weather here. I wouldn't say we have global warming either.
No, it's not global warming. But it's supposed to get into the 50s down in New York City, so we're going to be in the upper 40s at least here. And this time of year, that's unusually mild. But no, global warming and global cooling are both wrong. It's just extreme weather and abnormal weather for given seasons. We'll mm-hmm. see unusual weather in every given season.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
Right.
And we know we have a lot of engineered weather. This has been going on for quite some time. This is not a new phenomenon.
Don, I'm sure they do. And at the same time, Mother Nature has her own thing going. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for us to differentiate when we see some crazy weather or big storms, where it's coming from. Is it Mother Nature? Is it God? Or is it man-made?
Yeah, exactly. Well, here we are, Christmas day, and the appraisal that I could give, or the appraisal of the world right now is one of just a pure state of chaos and confusion and deception and corruption. All the shun words.
Amen to that, Don.
It seems that in recent days that there has been, and I don't know if this is because of the holiday today, you know, this special holiday that not everyone celebrates. Even those that celebrate it more for the commercial value than they do the spiritual value.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking about the corporations that, you know, make a killing because people feel compelled, they feel this need to buy gifts.
They commercialized the Christmas holiday to an incredible extent, yes, where it seems to be all about the gift, the present, rather than what it should really be, a spiritual thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, there, what I was beginning to allude to there is, despite all of this, there is this attack on Christianity. There's this attack on the let's say the worship of the Son of God, in the sense that someone else has a different viewpoint, therefore ours should be totally invalid, or anyone.
Yeah. Well, you know, Don, here they are, the same people, the authorities, the institutions, they tell us we have to tolerate all this other nonsense. Got to tolerate homosexuals, got to tolerate that religion and that other religion, whether it's got to tolerate the Jewish religion, the Muslim, whatever. But, oh no, can't tolerate the Christians. Oh, no way, they're so bad. It's so right in our face, contradictory, that I just don't know why many Americans still tolerate it, but I've had enough of it. And but it's clear, they do not like Jesus at all, and there's a reason for it, and that's because they're dark forces, and dark forces cannot stand light forces, especially the source of all the light, himself. They cannot take that at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got word of a miracle, and they're calling this a Christmas miracle, but it actually happened on November 5th. There was a girl in the Atlanta area who was born with congenital health problems and suffering most of her life, actually. And she was in the hospital on life support, on a ventilator, and the family had been praying to arrive at this decision as to whether or not they should pull the ventilator. The doctors had said, you know, for all intents and purposes, she's not going to live. And she had some major surgeries. Some had to do with a shunt that they put in her skull, and then they had to revise these shunts over and over again until they got it right. But she was having massive amounts of liquid that had to be drained from her body just for her to cope with all the anomalies that were going on with her health. Mm-hmm. She was in really bad shape. So to make a long story short, on November 5th, the family had gathered at the hospital in her room and were praying over whether or not they should actually pull the ventilator, unplug it, basically, and then deprive her of oxygen and her ability to breathe. She was breathing totally by artificial means. The one of the nurses noticed an apparition on the hall monitor in the hospital, and I have a photograph of this.
Oh, great.
I haven't posted it on my site yet, but I'm going to, along with the story. It's a picture of an angel.
With wings?
With wings.
Beautiful.
Hovering in the air, very bright. It's so bright that you see the reflection on the polished floor.
Wow.
And or let's say the waxed floor. Then she went home 9 days later.
Great.
So
that sounds great.
It's a pretty interesting
nice
story.
Happy ending on that one.
Oh yeah. So here they were on November 5th of this year. They were going to pull the plug, and she would have not lasted very long because she couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. There's an apparition of an angel, and then she began to get better, and they didn't even have to keep her on the respirator or the ventilator. Mm-hmm. She went home on the 14th of November.
It's wonderful to hear that, and it seems people, when we hear these kinds of stories, we think it's so rare, so just so inconsistent in life for those kind of events, and yet it's very common. And we're just so disconnected from true reality that we find this amazing, but the angelic activity has been continuous since the beginning of time in the affairs of mankind. And sometimes more blatant and obvious than others. Sometimes they're very subtle in their effect. Sometimes they're right there, standing right next to you,
mm-hmm.
obvious as all could be,
yeah.
in their effect.
Yeah.
And so it's just great to hear that, because it's the beautiful side of life. It's the true reality to life. The dark side of life is temporary. It's imperfect. It's from the fallen angels, and its time is almost expired, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so this rapport with the angelic activity, Don, it's great, and that's the way it should be for all of us most of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Always in good rapport with the angels.
Yeah. This actually occurred at Presbyterian Hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was an Atlanta TV station that first covered the interview, and then I think it was picked up by CBS in New York. So
so it got some promotion.
Yeah. Didn't see anything about this on the mainstream media, though.
Yeah, there
I have to say.
There you go.
Again.
Anything Christian, bury it. Don't let it out. Don't let them know that Mary appeared over Zaytun, Egypt in 1970, late 69 into 70. For 2 weeks straight every night, over a Coptic church, hovering, 5,000 Muslims in 2 weeks converted to Christianity. Plenty of photographs.
Hmm.
After telling a good friend of mine in California that story quite a while back, she followed up a while later and told me that while in L.A. in a cab, there was a Middle Eastern guy driving it, and he had a photograph of Mary. So she found it interesting, since he was probably Muslim. So she inquired why he had a photograph of Mary, and he says, oh, I converted to Christianity. I was in Zaytun, Egypt, back in 1970, when she appeared for 2 weeks straight every night.
Hmm.
Yes. And so, yep, these stories you never hear in the news, in the mainstream media. They will deny the truth and promote the lie. That's what they do.
Now, there's something, you and I didn't really plan a show per se, and I think on Christmas, we certainly could talk about the birth of Christ. We could talk about his ministry. We could talk about all the things that have happened throughout history. As a result, I think more Christians have been slaughtered or murdered in the sake of the whole concept of organized religion than any other religion in our present time.
Yes, between the infighting among organized religions, as well as the enemy, the dark forces that totally despise Christians. I mean, yeah, the Nazis killed many Jewish people. But, they don't talk about all the Christians they killed.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the communist Russians, which was all, interestingly, Jewish-backed, the Zionist Jews. It was all backed by them. They financed the whole thing. And who'd they go after? The Christian. And so, yes, the Christians have been, ever since their master walked the earth, they've been under constant attack, as the master said they would.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're going to do this to the master, he said, then what do you think they're going to do to his servants?
Yes. Now, we, in just contemplating this whole thing this evening, various times today, but this whole thing, this whole issue of all this chaos and how one's religious beliefs is somehow, or one's faith, I prefer that word actually, one's faith is to be attacked or destroyed. It's basically what they did to Christ himself. Mm-hmm. It's what they did to him constantly throughout his ministry, and he confronted those that would attack his message. Really, it was about a message. It wasn't necessarily about him per se, and it's not his ego. It's not this
person. He never showed his ego.
He never asked anyone to worship him at all.
He never asked for anything.
Yes,
except to be recognized as everything that he said was the truth, and all everyone had to do was to test it, apply it, and verify it.
Yes,
and
the
if
fulfillment.
It was the truth, then to acknowledge it and follow it.
Yeah, the fulfillment, I would call it.
Well, absolutely, he was the fulfillment to everything.
Now, in contemplating this, Michael, a word came to mind, and I wanted to share some definitions because this directly relates to our situation in a transitive sense. So let me explain what I mean. The word offering came to mind. Now, this was a word of discernment. This wasn't something that was going on in my head. I was feeling and hearing this word offering, and I'm thinking, okay, there's a message coming through here. Study this word, but don't study it with the mind. Feel in the heart what this word, why this word is surfacing, why it's coming out, why it's presenting itself. And I thought, okay, Let me see what the word offering says in the dictionary. We think we know what words mean, and I'm not saying that you're necessarily going to get the meaning of a word when you go to a dictionary, because so many times it's the opposite of what you think the word really means. In other words, we're being given these new meanings of words in our language sort of as a psyops aspect of the matrix, and this is not just in government, or not just in law, or not just in our education, but it's even in religion it's being used.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the word offering all the time, but it's always in the context of us giving money or some sacrifice. Now, and I'd like to read these meanings because it led me down a path that really becomes quite simple. Rather, so I'm going to start complex with more letters in the first word. The word offering, a thing offered especially as a gift or contribution, a thing produced or manufactured for entertainment or sale, a contribution especially of money to a church, a thing offered as a religious sacrifice or token of devotion. Okay, mm-hmm. So... this is something that is now taking the physical and making the physical representative of the spiritual. And they're two totally different things. One is actually just serving the purpose of experience, and the other is who we are. So how can you define the person as who they are to a thing that they may possess, that they can either keep or give up?
There's nothing's changed since the very beginning. The people were always instructed in making sacrifices. And so the battle was between which God are you sacrificing to?
Mm-hmm.
The false gods or the true God? And that's where we are today. So, you know, you hear about the offering and the sacrifices required always of us. But mm-hmm. they never offer anything or sacrifice anything.
Yes.
And so they're feeding off of us continuously if we allow them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go on, and I have two more, let's say, sections in this. I'm not going to camp out on this all night, though one could, actually. Now, we take the first two syllables of the word offering, we'll drop the ing off it, and you have an offer. In a verb sense, present or proffer something for someone to accept or reject as so desired. Intention to do, or let's say readiness, or the intention to do something for or on behalf of someone. Within infinitive, in other words, this could go on and on and on, okay? Then we have different transitive senses of the word. For instance, make available for sale, an offer that you can't refuse, provide something, present something, especially an opportunity for consideration and possible exploitation, or present a prayer or sacrifice to a deity. Make an attempt to show one's readiness for a violence or resistance. You see, all these different meanings of this word. Now, one step further, Michael, I would like to go with this, and that is to the first single syllable, off. Away from the place in question, to or at a distance. Away from the main route, so as to be removed or separated. Absent, away from work, starting a journey or race, leaving so as to bring to an end or be discontinued, canceled. This is pretty revealing. We have all these different meanings, and most of the time what we think the word means, or what the intention of the word as it's presented to us, causes us to perform an action that another directs us to do. If it's in a religious context, I'm making this offering, but somehow this is going to make me right with God because I am sacrificing, as if there's something that I have to give up that God doesn't already have. It's actually denying the oneness with God.
Well, Don, you see, we're in a mechanical world. We never got into this yet, but we're in a mechanical world. There's a cost to everything, a price to everything. And we are required to sacrifice. There's no getting around that. We're in a world of sorrow, and we generally find God through our suffering. And so God doesn't want or require anything from us as far as that he needs. Except what he feeds on, and all the good angels, is the love vibration, where the fallen angels feed on the fear vibration, which mm-hmm. is negative and heavy, and they thrive on that. That's their food.
Yeah.
Where the food for the good Lord and the good angels and the Almighty, it's love. That love vibration is what they feed on. So in that sense, they need that. But he's got plenty of it, because he's got myriads of angels adoring him 24/7, 365.
Yes, however, he's actually giving us the opportunity to be a part of that.
That's correct. That to participate in it with our own free will and choose whether or not we want the light or do we want the darkness. And so down here, the only sacrifice required of us is to live virtuously, to always do the right thing, and to stay away from all the vices. And that's the only sacrifice that's required of us. No other offering is required. So, you know, when we hear about the offerings that you're discussing from them, and mm-hmm. we have sacrifice and all that, sure, Don, they're distracting us now
yeah.
from our true requirement to the Godhead, Father, Mother God, and the Holy Son. Father God, Creator, creates our spirit. Mother God, who is nature, and gives us our clothing, our body, to clothe our spirit in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Son, who redeems everything that may fall out of perfection. And so the only requirement that we are expected is simply to stay away from vices, to live virtuously, so that we can have a true affinity with them and bask in their power, enjoy their power, because as their children, we become very powerful beings, mm-hmm. as the Lord instructed and taught.
Yeah. Now,
and so, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to comment a bit further in this, because now I question why this came from within. And all these meanings of this word, and really the clarity of how the word is used to control society, became quite evident at that footprint. I almost said it became quite evident at the realization of how the word is being used. In other words, we can be conscious of this. You know, when you hear them saying, well, you know, the Lord needs money, God needs money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that a hilarious one?
Oh, yeah. And I always say, you know, as far as I know, God never had a cash flow problem.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know he was so desperate for cash.
Yeah. And what is it? Federal Reserve note.
Yeah, right.
Send them in, folks, you know.
That's right.
Send them in to P.O. Box. Cloud number 9.
You know, that is just hilarious. I always get a big kick out of that one. And watching people kick in the Federal Reserve notes like the Lord really was requiring it from them is equally amazing. But the Lord will love that when we as individuals do donate whatever wealth we have, whether it's cash or some other material wealth, to those that need it, you know, that are desperate, we can spare it. The Lord loves that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not required of us to go to some big institution and trust that they are going to utilize our offering to them, hard-earned money, efficiently and mm-hmm. honestly. I find that very naive. I don't go that way.
Yeah.
I say, Lord, I have some spare money or spare materialism, whatever it is. Bird feed, I'll buy bird feed, feed the birds. Food for people, toss around some formulas to those that need it, but they can't afford it. Any kind of way, just to keep spreading it around, and that way, as you give, so you shall receive. Never forget that principle.
Well, that's the Pauline method. You know, Paul said, the Lord loveth a cheerful giver.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus himself said, when ye give, give in secret.
Right.
When ye pray, go into the closet and pray.
That's right.
It's not, hey, I said this prayer for you, guess what?
That's right, Don. He actually followed up and he said, be not like these Pharisees and scribes who stroll down the streets dressed up in all their fancy garments, but are just tombs on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Carcasses on the inside, because they're empty, they're dead. They have no real spiritual life towards God. It's all a show
mm-hmm.
for the material reward. And that's right.
So in that sense now, I'm looking at the offering and how it's used and how it's intended. It's not the same as you giving to someone who's suffering sometimes as a result of the offerings that they gave to another. You know, mm-hmm. they're giving out of this expectation that this miracle is going to happen because
yes.
they've given money. And mm-hmm. and I've seen many TV evangelists flaunt the power that they exert over others after they've taken their last dime.
And they're vultures.
Yes. I've literally seen this with my mm-hmm. own eyes and heard it with my ears, and to see how they act and gloat over this power. Now, we have a tendency in a general sense with all this chaos that I referred to at the beginning of the show and the, you know, the discussions about 2012 is a couple of years down the road here. What's going to happen? Are we going to have a polar shift? Are we going to have tidal waves? Are we going to get hit by Planet X? We are accepting the offerings of the media. We're mm-hmm. accepting the offerings of the PSYOPs programs that are designed just to create that fear, just to create the dissension and the separation amongst ourselves, who are the only ones talking about it.
To create the belief system.
Exactly. Exactly. And so in meditating or contemplating, in not necessarily in an intellectual sense, I mean, we're discussing this, but these feelings that are propelling these words, that are giving the words I'm speaking power, and your words are coming from spirit. They're coming from the heart. And a simple thing that we can do, I think, and because there are solutions to our problems, is to test these things that we're asked to do and ask ourselves, is this something that is going to take away my power, my sovereign power, the power that God gave us, the God that is within us? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to just comply to have what appears to be the easy road? Mm-hmm. You might have to make a difficult decision. You see, the criminals that steal, the criminals that rape and pillage and create wars, don't even give a second thought to what they're doing. They're not even asking for the offering. They're just taking.
Yes.
Okay? They're stealing.
Yes, with no conscience.
Yes. And in fact, in violation of the very laws that they themselves have created for the rest of us.
Yes, so, they're very contradictory all the time.
Yeah. And in contemplating this, I'm looking at the laws and I'm thinking to myself, well, these are nothing but more offerings that are made to look official, that are made to look godly, although we go back to the 10 laws, and really there are 2 laws,
mm-hmm,
out of those 10, that if one follows those 2, the other 8 are moot points.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they all recognize, or both of those recognize the oneness of all of the creation. Now,
yes, absolutely. And it's just a matter of us coming to the realization that we have to properly use our minds, our thought power, our imaging ability. We're made in the image of God. So we have the power of imaging, imagination. We have to use it very constructively. While we speak, we're energizing the atomic, the atoms, all of matter. We're qualifying it with every thought and word we say. And so if they don't want us to catch on to how powerful we are, once we realize this is what we're really doing, we have the ability to image, to create with our thought, and to then activate it with the word, the spoken word, which is qualifying matter. And once we do this properly, we understand the technique and use it properly, living virtuously is what this is all about. This is how it all happens. Then we are no longer operating at their level. We rise above it. Fear, just the fear that they're promoting cannot reach us. We're operating in the spirit realms with the good angels and the Lord. We're in rapport with them, meaning that our minds are at their level through most of our daily activity with our thoughts. That's where our minds are. And then they have no hold on us at all.
Mm-hmm. Virtue would be a knowledge rather than a belief, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it would also be beyond, you know, we think of knowledge as thought, but knowledge also propels action. It fuels action. It is causative. And I see, our ability to discern from the heart as a way to become more focused in a causative sense in our actions, so that we do the things that are the good things. Or, you know, the word good means akin to God, like God.
Yes, absolutely. And the Bible, as great as it is as a read, a great book, the New Testament is very limited and brief. The four Gospels basically reiterate each other. And so the greatest story in the whole Bible itself, the New Testament, the birth of the Christ, and everything that he taught and did, it'd be so enormous that it would take a lifetime to absorb it all. The guy was amazing. And so we don't get enough of that out of the Bible, and yet there's plenty in there still for us to understand what he really was about. But none of these preachers, none of these religions, none of these churches talk about this stuff. They get into the sidetrack stuff. For example, the Lord said, "As a man thinketh, so he becometh." That's something everybody should hear often, so they start to realize how important their thought activity is in their own personal lives as to whether or not they're bringing happiness to themselves or sorrow or misery.
A couple of nights ago, Joe Church actually made a very profound statement, and it's along the lines of what you just said, and he was underscoring what you said. I can't see anything really that he said the other night that disagrees, but he's talking about the fact that we're in a time now where we are going to be given an opportunity to make a choice that we've made over and over again on this planet and have gotten wrong every time. Let's say it's produced the same results. So did we make the right choice in that sense without being judgmental about it, because it's simply a matter of exercising the free will that God gives us. But we have given our free will away. That's the whole meaning I'm talking about, this word offering. God gave us life, and it's the God within us that gives us our power, and that when we allow others to offer, or when we offer our power, even unconsciously, to others, they take it, and they use it against us. They create what we call this matrix, this control system, whatever you want to call it, a new world order. It doesn't have any basis in reality. In fact, everything they do is a dichotomy of the truth, of God's word.
That's even what the dark forces do, Don.
Yeah, and he brought up the word dogma, and I had been thinking about that word over a few days recently. And the word dogma, what is that? Those are all of the illusions that traditionally are handed down from generation to generation or exist intentionally in the system as a control means. And if it's not of God, then what is it? Well, often you can take a word and look at it backwards, and the word dogma makes two words, am God. So they're actually showing something that's opposite by reversing it, literally turning the letters around in reverse order. God.
Yeah. Now, one thing's for sure. The dogmas is what happens to all religions over time once the progenitor of that religion is long gone. And so it becomes a base of material power for those that have assumed the positions of authority in that institution. And so then they generate these dogmas just to keep the mass entertained, the mass of people entertained, as to going through a ritual, believing that it has some kind of real meaning or value. And then they cut them off from the real necessary information that they should be hearing from such authorities as to how to think and how to speak and how to do everything as correct as you can to all your activities every day so that you start to benefit your life. And also start to expand your spiritual power, because if you are able to live that way, power will come to you. Because true power, which is God power, meaning that the Holy Spirit comes to you because it acknowledges you for living that way. Because it's the way of virtuous living, the way the Lord taught. And that's where power follows. When the Lord was walking through the crowd, and this woman knew that if she only touched his clothing, she'd be healed. She was afraid to approach him because she felt so unworthy. And so while the master's walking through the crowd, she reaches out and touches his clothing, and one particular translation says, and the Lord stopped and he felt power leave him. And then another translation is, the Lord stopped and he felt virtue leave him.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they're the same thing.
And he always made this statement, because your faith was so great, or because your faith is so great.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have, I'm paraphrasing this, but there, every instance where someone was healed, he would also instruct them what to do afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it was as if he was setting himself up for the fulfillment of God's plan.
Sure.
By the instruction he gave, where he said, don't go out and speak about this except to this individual.
Mm-hmm.
as a sign, because he knew that that individual would precipitate the covert plan to thwart his teaching, I don't want to use the word victim, because he was not a victim. In fact, that's part of the matrix, that mindset that if you can be victimized, then you are totally powerless. You have given up all your power, and there's nothing you can do to protect yourself or defend yourself.
Right.
And it's always, usually victimization is in a physical or material sense. And the mind is sometimes playing a role in that. It's a spiritual victimization, because this is really about spiritual warfare.
It's all about spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
Battle of souls.
Mm-hmm.
Battle for creation. To either make it back to its level of perfection that originally was in the very beginning, where the Bible talks about Genesis, the Garden of Eden, that was pure perfection. And then the Bible ends up in Revelation, where the garden is back into pure perfection. But the devils are doing everything they can to prevent that and to destroy the creation as much as they can. If they can annihilate all of it, the happier they are.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a sense, both sides are, I say both sides, those that worship God, those that know God, those that are living virtuously, expect eternal life. And then in this realm, where everything is opposite of God's laws, they're trying to recreate or to discover eternal life in the physical realm.
Mm-hmm.
As if that is the true essence, or by achieving that somehow, that they will have created an anti-universe, or an anti-God, or an anti-Christ. The dichotomy of what is good.
Well, their main purpose is they're cut off from God, totally cut off. They don't have their old spiritual abilities and powers anymore. They're not as great as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to invent technology in order to replace those abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly where we're at. And so they're hoping that they can acquire some kind of immortality through technology. Absolutely. Because they can't get it through the correct means, which is spiritual. And so that's their dilemma. And that's what happens to all traders, Don. They had their opportunities a long time ago. and they refused to acknowledge the Godhead. They were just very evil and selfish, and they actually felt they were superior to God. And how can the creation ever think it's greater than the Creator? But nonetheless, that's their dilemma. But as far as the Master goes, the Lord, His birth was to free us from their bondage, and He did. And all kinds of great events in His lifetime, tremendous events, just stunning events, because He traveled around a lot when He was young. And that's why the Bible doesn't cover much about His youth at all. It's a mystery. And He traveled around a lot and met various great masterminds like Apollonius of Tyana when he was in Greece. And Apollonius of Tyana was an amazing person, Christ-like. He was stunning with his powers and abilities, healing and knowledge and all kinds of other supernatural abilities. And so when the Lord came along, He was recognized to be the source, the true incarnation of the Almighty Himself, the manifestation of the Father through the Son. And when Apollonius took him to see the Delphi Oracle, at that point the Oracle said, "Now that the living Oracle is in flesh, now this Oracle will diminish in its abilities and no longer be." And from that point on, that's why the Oracle of Delphi, or Delphi, disappeared, just went quiet.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, that's not in the Bible. But the Master, you know, from His birth, the Magi, or the Magic Men, Magi as in magic, the three wise men who were Magi, three wise magicians who had the power but used it for good. Hence, wise men. They follow a star. That means the star is moving, if they're following it. And so they follow this moving star until they come to the place where the Lord's born. And immediately, He's aglow with light. He was a ball of light at birth, a literal ball of light, slowly coalescing and condensing into the baby infant, physical flesh. The Magi witnessed all this. They gave Him gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold for the spiritual wealth, frankincense for the wisdom, myrrh for the healing power, and so He was immediately recognized by these three wise men to be the incarnate of the Almighty Himself. A great thing. The angels were in the fields talking to the shepherds about watching their flocks, that the birth has just occurred of the Lord and Savior, and it's peace to all men and all living things. And everything was aglow. Very magical, incredibly magical night. How can it not be? Following the star moving through the sky, and then everything's aglow. The Lord is born as a ball of light. And everything's aglow, and angelic activity out in the fields. So just an amazing, amazing event that night. And then the rest of His life would just follow that same course of being totally amazing. Everybody to encounter Him would be stunned, amazed, except for those who despised Him because of jealousy and envy. And but everybody else would just be, you would not want to leave His presence. You know, He's just that good. And so, of course, He came to free us from the fallen angels and their imperfect material world that they trapped us in. And so, unfortunately, it wasn't really understood. And so it took a long time for us as mortals to comprehend what He was really all about. But He knew all that. And His mission was limited in time, because He's the King of the angels, and He stepped down through all the levels of habitation from all the angels, archangels, and angels under them, the seraphims, cherubims, on and on, all the way down to all the different levels of angels, down to the world of man. He lived with all of them and us. And so when He got to us, it was His final step in the process of experiencing all the creation that his Father created, because he was going to judge it all. How do you judge it and be a good judge? Well, you better understand the subject intimately. So how do you know a subject intimately? Well, you have to live with that subject, get to know it inside and out. You have to become that subject. And he did. And so when the time came, his mission was basically up, and he had to get back to his normal abode of the paradise heaven, ruling as the king of all the angels. And he had to depart. And so no better opportunity to conquer death than first making the ultimate offering and sacrifice to save all creation, which is us included, so that the evil forces could not get their grip on it and crush it, as they've done in previous worlds. And so he succeeded at all that, simultaneously blazed the trail for us, the path for us to follow. What more could we ask for? He blazed the trail. All we got to do is put our feet on it and stay on that path and don't let anything sway us. And boy, plenty will try once you put your feet on that path. And then, as we pursue that path, living virtuously, then because of his power conquering death, eventually the power will grow in us strong enough where that we become eventually worthy to be saved and overcome death as well, where the Lord restores us, as he will with all good things, back to their level of perfection. And that includes being an immortal. So that's the beauty of the Lord's life and mission. And unfortunately, we just don't really get that perspective. And you know, Don, when you watch the Christian movies or the Catholic movies of Jesus, like Jeffrey Powell and Max von Sydow, and I respect the guys as actors, they're great. However, every scene's always dark and gloomy. Yeah. You never see the Lord smiling. Mm-hmm. And it's always dark and gloomy and sullen, and it's like, how ridiculous. And these guys are wimpy looking, even though Max is a big guy. Jeffrey Powell, very effeminate. Max von Sydow, just not close to the physical appearance of the Lord himself.
Or Jeffrey Hunter, even.
Jeffrey Hunter was the closest of them all, because he was very good looking, and the Lord was incredibly handsome. And so Jeffrey Hunter had the physique. He was athletic as well. And so he was the closest, he really was. And that's, of course, my favorite one, the King of Kings. But you notice all the movies, aside from the King of Kings, it's always dark and gloomy. The Lord never smiles.
Mm-hmm.
He's never happy. Like, geez, isn't the guy, wasn't he ever happy? I mean, he's the Son of God. Isn't he happy about something?
Yeah, exactly. Now, exactly. I wanted to revisit something for a moment quickly here in our remaining moments. You mentioned the Delphi, and we have kind of a dichotomy here in that it was a sanctuary that was dedicated to Apollo, yet Apollo, it's a real sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was dedicated to Apollo, who is a myth. And then you have Apollonius, who is named after or in reverence to Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the existence of the sanctuary and the existence of Apollonius, which are both in reverence to Apollo, who is called a myth.
Right.
Something's not right with that whole picture.
That's right. You got it. Obviously, Apollo was not a myth.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. In fact, there are those that still, to this day, worship the sun god, which is the whole purpose of the winter solstice in that sense.
Yes, but Don, here's a perspective of all that isn't presented. For example, when the sun god concept was first promoted to civilization, that was in ancient Egypt, a long time ago, when it was in its prime, when it was really known as the land of Kem. And the pharaoh Ra, Akhenaten, who became Ra because he had his people finally to follow one God, that there was only one God. Don't worship all these other gods. There's only one true, almighty, creator God. And in order to recognize him, will use the sun as his symbol. Because, like the Almighty, the sun gives us light. Without that light, everything would perish. Like the Almighty, that sun is nourishing. It makes everything grow. And so, is the sun really bad? No, not at all. And as long as we acknowledge the sun as the manifestation of the Almighty and not the Almighty himself,
that's what I'm referring to.
You got it. Then we're in good standing with creation.
Mm-hmm. Because I have an oak tree that blocks the sun. I could consider that a step above the sun, just in the fact that it prevents the sun from shining at certain times of the year.
Mm-hmm. And it's a mighty tree for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just using that as an example. I could become dogmatic.
Sure.
In a belief that's not based in truth, but in superstition, or in illusion, for that matter.
Yes, but the sun itself, it's nothing to get hung up on, as long as you're not worshiping it's the creator. And Christmas time's a good appropriate time, even though the Lord wasn't born on December 25th.
Yes.
And many say it was maybe in the fall or something. No, it was in the spring. And most appropriately so, because the Lord ushered in the new age, the age of Pisces. The age of the bull was just expiring at his birth. And the age of the Pisces is now giving way to the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the early Christian symbol was the fish. Pisces symbol is the fish. And so during December 25th, you have the winter solstice, and that's the birth of a new sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's appropriate that the birth of the Son of God, who is known as the Son of Righteousness,
mm-hmm.
that we honor his birth during the birth of our new physical sun, which we, at least I, recognize to be the manifestation and symbol of the Almighty Eternal One.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any problem with December 25th as being Jesus' birthday, as far as worshiping him then, as appreciating his birthday, as long as we understand the real story behind it all and the meaning to it all. And this particular explanation, I haven't heard anybody say, and it's important. This clarifies it all. Even though, yes, the Roman Pope, to sway, quote-unquote, the pagans to start to follow Christianity by adopting their religions with what they wanted the Christian religion to become, but at the same time, the early pagans were the Christians.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what's so funny, because Jesus never went into a building, except when he went once in a while into a synagogue in his youth and lectured a little bit, and then that was it. He was always outside, slept outside, in gardens and groves, in the valleys and in the mountains, along the lakes and streams, along with the trees, hanging out against trees in the stream beds and stuff. So the early pagans you couldn't get them into a building.
Yeah.
There's no way they'd fall for that. It took them a long time, hundreds of years, to finally get them to think, this is where you worship God, in this building here. And then we're going to pass this plate around.
Yeah, well, the bottom line here, we're going to have to end the show here. The bottom line is Christ did what he did for his love for us in recognition of our oneness, and that is the ultimate light, that is the ultimate power, and we should understand that that is the meaning of Christmas, and it's
and
not
the ultimate sacrifice as well, Don.
Yeah, it's not at all the commercialism, the offerings that we are given as enticements to divest our hard-earned money to cause others to become wealthy.
Right.
And that certainly would have a lot to do with why we celebrate it in a more realistic sense.
let it be, you know, let the gift giving be focused and centered towards the young kids. Let them enjoy that. That's great. That's fine. Just don't spoil them. Make them appreciate everything as they get older. But the adults wanting things and stuff, it's like, come on. I mean, fine, you know, get something for the loved ones and all that. Absolutely great. But in general, the expectation of adults that, you know, what am I getting? I mean, get away from that. That's not what this is all about. Christmas should be every day of the year in your life, as far as how you live and how you view life.
Yeah, I was going to say that earlier. I mean,
absolutely.
If you're going to worship God and you're going to worship the birth of his son and what he came here to do, what he taught, it's really a part of virtuous living is living that every day and not just on December 25th.
You got it, buddy.
Well, Michael, we're at the end of that time that's allotted to us. I know you're going to be on next year.
So, wow.
Actually, I think we have you at are you with us on New Year's? I think you are.
Geez, Don.
I'm pretty sure you're on the show somewhere around New Year's or New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, sir.
New Year's Eve. Okay, so
great, Don. Thanks again, buddy.
I will.
Don, may I just say real quick, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank
to Don
you.
Don and his staff and your whole audience. Merry Christmas to everyone. God bless and take good care.
Well, thank you, and likewise to you, Michael. Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
And to Don Newsom, who is working on Christmas Eve on the West Coast, and shortly it's going to be Christmas there. So we want to thank him for not just for making Evident Footprints possible, but for even running the audio tonight.
All right, Don.
And Seth, if you're listening to us, Merry Christmas. If you're not, then just party on. And to the listening audience, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and stay tuned. We've got great shows coming up the rest of this week as well as next week. My guest, Christmas evening, will be none other than Ken Adachi. Friday night is Jim Murray. Got some great surprises coming up in the month of January, some Power Pack shows. We're going to be doing a two-hour show on January 6th, which is a Tuesday, with Michael St. Clair. And we're going to lay it all out on the line. That's going to be a very, very interesting show. And also, I pretty much have a confirmation from Dr. Richard Souder. We're going to be discussing some of his writings and some of his research, underground bases and tunnels and the like. And so I'm excited about that. We've got more surprises on the way. In the meantime, again, Merry Christmas, everyone, and I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.